Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Forrest
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the Galaxy phone, the iPhones, the iPads,
whatever,
all the technologies. Eventually, they'll just be embedded in your forehead. And here's another episode of This Life with Dr. Drew and Bob Forrest.
Everything good with you?
Yeah, great.
You came in with a little bit of a head of steam. We'll get into it, no doubt, you and I.
Yeah, I get frustrated.
Frustrated
with the society at large.
I am so much with you, my friend. But let me get our guest involved with this first. It is Joe Lockett. He discusses politics and social issues every week on his radio show. You can hear him every Saturday on WYDE 101.1 FM, 4 to 7 Central Standard Time, I believe. Policies and social issues, and of course, the opiate problem he gets into. You can follow Joe at Joe Lockett, L-O-C-K-E-T-T, show, at Joe Lockett Show. He's also at jlockettshow.com, Facebook/Joe Lockett Jr., Joe.Lockett Jr. So, Joe, welcome.
Here we are.
Thank you. How everybody doing?
Good. So, he's down in Alabama, right?
Yeah.
And the South has had a major run with this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Georgia, I've been a little bit involved with, Joe, and I've been impressed. They've been rather proactive. They sort of see their priority as education and prevention, but in reality, because people that don't really understand this sort of think they can stop it as opposed to
right.
having to deal with it because it's so pervasive now.
Right. Well, you know, down here in Alabama, you know, the problem has run really rampant, Dr. Drew. And the thing is, I think we're so late down here in the South. It's really.
Did you get a phone call?
Something happened here.
You know what you could do? Turn off the video portion of your
thing. The video just aggravates
it
everything.
Might actually take too much energy.
Turn off your camera and we'll just talk.
Click on the little camera icon again.
So.
Okay.
So Alabama is you were saying Alabama's a little behind?
I think because in Alabama, I think, you know, we was really late to acknowledge that we truly had a problem.
Yeah.
And, you know, when President Donald Trump and his administration started putting it to the forefront, then people started to actually talking about the problems they were having behind closed doors. And now it's a big problem because people don't know what to do.
Yeah. Well,
I think the things I've read is Alabama and Louisiana and the parts of that Gulf Coast were a little late compared to West Virginia, Kentucky.
In terms of getting the epidemic?
In terms of the epidemic being created. So you got to understand, the way it was explained to me is the South has always been a pill-consuming part of the American society.
Is that true?
Right?
You know that for sure?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you go back, Elvis Presley, you ever heard of him?
All right.
Dr. Nick?
All right.
You know what I mean? So there's, and Dexedrine, and so it was,
let me just
it was
say,
socially acceptable to take medicines.
I'm going to let you go, because I'm going to unravel a whole bunch of stuff you just opened up there. But let me just point out, the governor has published the State of Alabama Opioid Action Plan. That was from last December. Outlines of four pronged. So it's very similar to Georgia's thing. Prevention, intervention, treatment, and community response. But I don't know, Joe, you got to help me here, man. I have been been thinking a lot about the South lately. I ended up reading the Grant biography and reading all about Reconstruction and what a fucking mess that was. And that's this weird period of American history that those of us in the North and West ignore. And it's got to still have repercussions in the South. And whenever there's a population that's traumatized, you see opiates. Is anybody
right.
having that kind of conversation? I mean, the war was – I think it's still with us in some weird way. At least if the war isn't, the Reconstruction is.
Well, the Reconstruction is here, but the biggest thing, you know, you see in the Black community, Dr. Drew, is this, is when we're talking about the opioids, people say, okay, opioids is a problem, but when there was a marijuana problem and a drug problem, we didn't look at it as a crisis.
Yep.
You know, we started to say, you know, putting people in jail. Now that it's opioids and it crossed across the lines, now we're talking about, okay, now it's a crisis in America.
So let's really spill what Joe's saying. Joe, this is a white problem.
Yeah.
Because African-Americans have been ill-served by the medical community for so many centuries that they take care of their own and that's that. So they don't take as many. They don't go to the doctor for stuff the way white people typically do. Right? Joe, am I right on that?
Right, right.
Yeah, certainly not for pain and things like that.
And it's evidence in the Purdue lawsuits that I read is that doctors, pain clinics were less likely to prescribe opiates to African Americans.
But there's a he's saying there's a bigger problem here, which is that why when it was crack and pot, that was, well, that's a, it's a criminal problem. That's bad people being bad.
You'd have to ask your buddies.
Listen, you and I never saw it that way. You and I never saw it that way, right?
No. And the Rockefeller Act was created to, you know, that's the interesting thing. Marijuana is a different category, but when there was a drug tsunami of death in the African American inner city community, it was a criminal problem.
From crack.
And we need a new law to put these criminals in jail for life.
Yeah.
Now that it's a white problem, all of a sudden we need to treat them with compassion.
Well, and what's even weirder
and understanding.
What I think is even weirder about it, it was perpetrated by doctors. And so why are those doctors – there's even another layer to this, Joe, and those doctors are all ethnicities, let's face it. But the doctors were doing nothing different than the crack dealers in the inner cities.
That's
nothing
my point.
Different.
Yes, they had a new drug dealer.
That's right.
Yeah, and we go round and round about this. I don't know if you ever listen to our podcast, but I tend to think that – you know, Drew thinks it's the doctors were bad and the pharmaceutical industry was just – doing their job of
they were duplicitous. They were duplicitous, but they were not the you got to read
the evil
Dreamland.
Empire.
You got to read Dreamland, both you guys.
I have Dreamland. I've been skimming through it. It's boring as hell. I've been talking about this stuff for 15 years.
Yeah, because you recognize what we've been talking about.
So
I called Sam Quinones. I talked to him. He'd come on the show. We got to get Sam on here, Susan. Producer Susan, Sam Quinones, he's got to get on here. But anyway, Joe, I'm sorry, I digress.
But Alabama does have a significant problem. I think ninth in the states, right? Because of its close proximity to Florida, there was people going over to Florida to the pill mills and getting the pills and bringing them back to Alabama far back as 2001, 2002, 2003.
Right. But I think when we're looking at the crisis that is actually happening, like we said, it's 2001. The only reason why it has come to the surface right now is because of what Donald Trump made in an issue and said he was going to attack. It was a campaign promise. He's out there doing it. And he's working at it. But if he was not doing this right now, we still would have this crisis. Nobody just be talking about it.
I suppose that's true. Although the Obama administration went after it pretty hard, too. They just didn't have the same kind of. You know, I went to the White House a couple weeks ago, and it was all this secretary level leader. So the entire cabinet has been enlisted in this campaign. While Mr. Obama, President Obama, I think was really just looking at the medical, you know, the VA and the Surgeon General. And by the way, the Surgeon General, you know what he issued? You hear what he issued last week, right? A medical directive. They haven't done that since essentially that alcohol is bad for pregnancy and cigarettes cause cancer. And this is the first one since that. And it said everyone should be carrying this around.
Yeah,
I'm holding up some Narcan, Joe.
Okay.
When you're by yourself,
you
and
should
you
be carrying this.
I have one in my car. When you're by yourself and you OD'd, it's hard to bring yourself back to life. Kids are still going to die.
Yeah.
You know, you may reduce it a little bit. They thought 2017. I don't know what Alabama statistics were, but everyone who's been on the ground floor of this thought we're going to see a. We're going to see a downward slant in 2017, and in fact, it was a 30% increase in death.
In deaths, but not in prescribing. So
yeah, but it's the fentanyl. The kids are using fentanyl that they buy on the streets now.
I know it's bad,
right?
Terrible.
So, what are the solutions? I think you know it's got to be something that's free, because when you start looking at how many treatments it takes somebody to get clean. You're talking about 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Even on a Medicaid rate is still like $5,000. So you're talking about $45,000 per addict times 17 million.
You're about to sing my tune here.
Nobody's going to pay for that. We have to find community-based solutions, faith-based solutions.
So that's something that there's a rich heritage in the South of faith-based solutions.
What are the churches doing down there about this opiate crisis?
To my knowledge right now, realistically, I know in the black community, the black community is not really even addressing the opioid situation, because I don't know if it's not as a big problem as in the white community.
It isn't. It is not. It is factually not as big a deal.
So they're not addressing it. What we're addressing in the black community is, of course, violence. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest thing here in the South, that we're addressing the guns in the schools and of that nature. Now, in the white community, you know, like I said, it's becoming an epidemic and you're seeing it more. You see the, you know, you see the videos, you see the news stories where parents are having their kids in the car and they're ODing.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we see some of those small things right now. But again, you know, as I said, Dr. Drew and Bob, is when you look at this situation, it's just a reversal. And we call them one is a crime and one is a crisis. And so how do we deal with these situations? We never dealt with the weed problem and the crack problem. So I don't know how we're going to deal with the opioid problem.
Well, that's a really interesting statement, right? You know, what's embedded in there is we're looking at a bigger pie, which is addiction and trauma and spiritual emptiness and a lot of messed up families and all the things that sets up addicts to be addicts, right? I think Joe's right. I wish you're right. I wish we were having a bigger conversation. The opiates got all the headlines, but there is a bigger conversation to be had.
Well, it's just a symptom. I've always thought drugs are a symptom, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So what is causing this symptom? When you look at, you know, I was talking to a guy who's part of West Virginia drug kind of rehab world. And he said in Huntington, West Virginia, in one weekend, they had 23 overdoses and 11 homicides. Then when you look at the story of Huntington, West Virginia, there is 40% unemployment among people 18 to 34.
Well, that's another part of this story.
That's crazy. If you don't have a job and your parents are stressed out and divorced and all the chaos that poverty and multi-generational poverty creates, why wouldn't you want to check out? And so that's another reason why I don't think Suboxone is going to be the solution to this, because the underlying issues are still there. Poverty, lack of jobs, lack of economic opportunity,
but listen,
lack of bad education systems.
Hey,
so the same stuff we've been talking about for 40 years are causing this.
But you're leaving one out, and that Joe's bringing that to our attention, and that's racism. There's right?
Well, it's the first time racism has worked good to the advantage of African Americans. If doctors won't prescribe opiates to them, it's the first time ever it worked.
No, I'm thinking, but you know, I'm across the board. I love everybody, but like I said, when we're talking about this problem, we're talking about opioids, and we're talking about crack and cocaine and all this other stuff. But when we're truly looking at it, human beings have an issue, right?
Yeah.
White people deal with it with opioids. Black people deal with it with crack.
That's
it's
right.
No different.
That's right.
Real talk. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody's dealing with these things because they want to check out. We're inundated each and every day on social media, life problems, poverty, and all that other stuff. That ain't nothing new. Yeah. We're just finding new ways to deal with it.
Yeah.
And because
I like
of the way
that. That's the truth. I like that line. It's been the same problem since the mid to late 60s.
It sort of unraveled in the 60s. I can never figure out why it unraveled so suddenly, and we were just reverberating with it still. But what Joe, do you have any ideas about where we start to turn to solve?
No, number one is like what we're doing right now, actually having a real conversation. We're not putting it on just one thing or one community. Like you said, Dr. Drew, we have to look at this thing as a whole.
Yeah.
What is going on in the human race that is making people want to check out?
Yeah.
And then the other part of it is, there are dealers. There's a doctor and there's a dealer on the corner.
Yep.
We got to deal with those guys.
Yep.
Once you get the supply chain out of each community, then we can actually talk about solving the problems and taking care of the addicts. But as long as you have dealers, you're always going to have addicts because somebody's going to want to check out and somebody's going to sell.
And there's sort of an uncomfortable layer in there too. In all the states that are making pot legal, the state becomes the cannabis dealer. And if we're going to characterize that as a problem, then that's dicey, Bob.
Well, I just think we need real solutions to problems that we've had for decades and decades and decades. And that is a society that Charles Barkley said an interesting thing last weekend. He said, you know, people need to look in the mirror and say, I'm a loser or my life sucks because of me.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's like something Reagan would have said. And now Charles Barkley is saying it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we're all coming up with this.
Yeah,
we got to stop this victim mentality and this blaming mentality and then have real concrete ideas of how we can shift our society to better jobs, truly better jobs, truly opportunity, but also hold people accountable, which I don't think we do, right?
I agree with you. I think, you know, holding people accountable goes back to the home.
Yep.
When you look at how the way kids are being raised today, right? I talk about this all the time on my radio show that parents are not being parents. They want to be the kid's friend.
Yep.
Right. And so you produce a kid that thinks they can get away with anything. Hence, you have, you know, a kid going out to a public addressing a police officer saying something he shouldn't say, right? Yeah. Making an action he shouldn't act, shouldn't do. And all of a sudden, you know, the police feel threatened and the kid gets shot. He ends up dead.
Yeah.
We have to go back to the foundation. Like, I was born in the 70s. I had a mama and daddy. Guess what they did? They whooped my behind and they told me when I was wrong. They was not my friend. Mm-hmm. They knew what was in my room. When I got a car, they knew what was inside of my car. Parents these days don't even check their kids' cell phones. They don't check their kids' book bags. A lot of parents letting these kids get away. So we are producing a society of kids right now, what you see with the David Hawks and everybody, because they think that at the end of the day that they can say anything and their truth is going to reign over the foundations of really what it takes to be a parent and an adult.
But you said you have mom and a dad, so it's a family. You know, it's intact. And there's a guy named Jordan Peterson who's a little bit of a lightning rod. People may not like him, but I'm going to bring him up. And he's a you know, academic clinical psychologist. And his position is that families without dads, if you don't have some male figure around, whether it's a coach from school or dad or whatever, that abandonment is felt deeply. And dad sort of represents society in the household. And if you feel abandoned by dad, or you don't respect dad, or dad was not available in the right way to you, you start feeling that way towards society at large, Bob. And so I think a big crisis right now, one of the pieces of this is the dad crisis. We kind of have a dad crisis in this country. And we think about it as healthy families or intact families, but when you really get right down to it, it's like, it's kind of a dad crisis. Do you agree?
Well, I see too many dads at school. You know what I mean? Dads aren't dads anymore. They're just secondary moms. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Another friend.
It's another friend rather than right. I always idolized my dad and was scared of him. And I was scared to disappoint him. And I also modeled after him. He has a hard work ethic. He's very people oriented, people friendly, all the things that have benefited me, I modeled that from my dad, right?
Yep.
Then all of a sudden I have a family and everybody tells me, "Oh no, you can't have you don't want your boy scared of you, do you?" And I was like, "I was scared of my dad." You know what I mean? Like that's like the ultimate sin authoritarian figure in your children's lives.
You just pushed a button of mine. The last high school presentation I gave, they gave me negative reviews, and I was super gentle through the whole thing because I was too authoritative.
And you were holding back.
I was holding back big time, and I was like, "Well, I'm done with that. No more of that." Or they said authoritarian. I was authoritarian. And I was boy, you got the wrong dude. If that's authoritarian, whoo! Tell us, Joe, where can we hear your show?
WYDE 101.1 FM on Saturdays, 4 to 7 Central Standard Time. You can follow me out there on social media at Joe Lockett Show at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and all that good stuff.
So, yeah. Joe, you know, it's exciting to have you on. You know, it's sadly the 50-year anniversary of the death of Martin Luther King, right?
Yep. Recently.
And you know, there was this great King special on HBO or something about how unpopular he was from 1966 to his death in 68.
That.
And it was because he was talking about the same things we started talking about. Real jobs, real opportunities, poverty, multi-generational poverty. That's why I say when I watch this documentary and then I start thinking about now, nothing has changed in 50 fucking years.
We got 50 years, 150 years. I've been thinking about the Reconstruction a lot.
And anybody who brings it up is unpopular. You know what I mean?
Well, I guess I'm very unpopular, Bob, because that's what I said in my readings for the other day, because I'm like, you know, he fought so hard for us to be not segregated anymore. And now you got kids in college asking for safe spaces. Dude, do you know that we wanted to be together? Now you want to be in a space where people look like you and be like you? Really? Think about what the hell you're saying. Seriously?
That's right.
I'm very distressed. I'm really distressed.
Well, the rights of the individual have been started.
Yes,
started
that's where I was going to go.
Misinterpreted as what is the greater good of the society?
Yes,
for the greater good of the society, the individual's rights matter, but to the detriment,
the abject detriment of the community.
And it gets really crazy. I mean, you know, I'm one of the few liberals that was outspoken about the transgender bathroom thing. I was like, who gives a fuck about where some people go to the bathroom? We're at war. We have high unemployment and African American kids are being murdered on our streets. Right. And the top priority that the president wants to talk about is transgender bathrooms.
You know I had a problem with President Obama on that. I really did. I'm not going to say a lie. I had a problem with him when he came up with that. Because here's the thing, and a lot of people don't think about this. He passed laws upon the American people that he never have to follow. His daughter, his wife would never have to go into a bathroom with anybody because he has Secret Service.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. I you're going down a road that I very much have a lot
of
feelings
about.
But that's
an individual's right.
No. Which is
against the greater
our
good.
Our people in the government, they think of themselves as somehow above us. They do not subject themselves to the same laws, the same standards as they require.
Obviously,
the
they don't like to fly and coach.
Right. They don't like to fly and coach. They like to have no disclosure agreements. They like to have sexual misconduct and then not be held accountable. But if they are, they want us to pay for it. I mean, this is crazy, crazy ass stuff. So I have some. There's just things are just they're just out of alignment right now.
Does it bother you that the American people don't know that Martin Luther King, the history of him has been whitewashed? What his life was like from 65, 66 to his death? That he was very unpopular. That people pulled his funding. He was fighting for janitorial. The day he died, he was down there striking for janitorial sanitation workers.
Hoover, what's his name? The FBI was up his ass all the time trying to criminalize
him. And all of a sudden, they just put him right next to Abraham Lincoln on Mount Rushmore. And the reality of his frustration and what he was trying to accomplish is completely ignored.
But that is true of a lot of mythological figures. Lincoln was hated.
But he was
hated.
In our lifetime. This is a man in our lifetime, and he was put into the mythology
I'm telling you, overnight, Lincoln went from hated. That's why they shot him. They hated him to a hero overnight. And so that does tend to happen with humans. Once somebody gets sacrificed.
Well, the big thinkers tend to get shot, don't they?
Well,
not that Kennedy was a big thinker.
The big ideas people get killed. I guess I it's more than big ideas though. It's social fabric ideas. They're pulling at the social fabric, and people get weird about that. Yeah, Joe.
Yeah, I agree with you. And you know, to your question, Bob. You know, when I look at what Dr. Martin Luther King stood for, what disappoints me now is that. We as a black community, we're still in the same space. If we had to boycott today, I always ask people, you want me to boycott? What the hell am I boycott to? Walmart is owned by whites. Banks are owned by whites. So we haven't did anything on an economical level to take over ownership. And so in the black community, that was Martin Luther King was working on. He was working on the economics. And we continue
I'm going to push back on you. I think he would be delighted with the progress that African Americans make in business and professions. I think he would see it a little bit. I bet you he would. I understand what you're saying. I don't disagree with what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But I'm saying I think you forget how far we've come from what he was fighting for.
I'm just saying in the black community as a whole, for me, when I'm looking at it and my kid, this is my thing, Dr. Drew. I don't want my kids and your kids to have the same conversation we're having today. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah. We have to do something a little bit different for the next generation.
Yeah.
And we're acting an ass right now because we're separating ourselves between politics and race, and we're not making any gain.
Yeah, I agree. We should reframe the conversation. Got any ideas?
Doing things what we're actually doing right now, and make sure that you know people can see that you and I only have a different, the only difference between you and I is our pigmentation. Right. I bleed red, white and blue. You guys do, too. If I cut you, you bleed. So we want what's best for our kids. I had to understand one thing. In the black community, we do things different. In the white community, you do things differently. That don't make us different. It's just we grew up in a different area because we protest. You guys won't protest. Some things that makes me upset would not make a white person upset. And we have to be OK with that. Yeah. But we got to move forward past politics and racism to make this a better place for all of us.
Hey, speaking of that, did you see Bill Maher speaking up for Laura Ingraham last night?
I just saw that. Yes.
Did you see it?
What was he saying?
He was saying, who's this kid? Like, he just wants to bully somebody. And he's saying, I'm finding myself defending Laura Ingraham, who is a horrible person, by the way. But he's saying you can't have a society like this.
We
just bully everybody off of the pulpit because you don't like what they have to say.
No, it's a mob, and the mob is busy right now. I've really realized that the mob is looking for a victim, and so it's picking off pieces here and there.
I know,
picking this one, picking that
one. I just wouldn't want to be Bill Maher's Twitter feed today.
But here's the deal:
those kids are going to crucify
him. I'm going to tell you, Martin Luther King was the victim of the mob in his day, and that's why, boom, that's what mobs do. They kill off and then they mythologize. That's what they do. So I think we're moving towards some sort of sacrifice, some sort of scapegoat. We have to be. That's what it feels like. I've seen this movie before. And they're picking off, the guillotines are out, and they're chopping off heads here and there, but we haven't found the big scapegoat.
What interested me is, if they don't like conservative media, why don't they just do a whole boycott of all of Fox News, right? Why pick on this woman who said something that was really innocuous? It really wasn't, you know, it was crappy to say to a teenager, but it doesn't deserve the death penalty, you know what I mean?
I'm going to tell you what, easy target, because y'all remember now, a couple of weeks prior, she had made an outrageous comment.
That's her
job. She told
LeBron
James to do what? Shut up and dribble.
Oh, yeah, right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
She got away with that.
That was, by the way, way worse.
What she said about LeBron was way worse.
Exactly. But she got away with it. So that's why she figured that when she was doing this with David Hogg, that it wasn't an issue, because she really didn't say anything bad. She didn't go after him. She just said, stop whining, pretty much.
Yeah.
What she said to LeBron James was really derogatory.
Yeah, yeah, that's right.
And so it's interesting. And I think that people in the middle, I'm trying to create this radical center, so that being a centrist, being a moderate, is the most radical thing you can do in America, right? I just had a thing with Governor Kasich last Tuesday.
Yeah.
And you know, he's a hero to me now. I mean, you couldn't be two more different people. But he just represents so many more of the centrist ideas I grew up with, and I think are a pathway to solving problems rather than the liberals over here, the conservatives over there. Let's argue, put them on television, watch it, and choose sides. It is like a pit bull fight.
Yeah,
it's like America terrible. Has become dogfighting. You know what I mean?
America like to see a train wreck. I mean, that's what, if you look at Jerry Springer, you look at the Murray Show, those things are famous. You can't name the last guest to be on either one of those shows, but why do we watch? It's a train wreck.
He's right.
The ones I like is who is the person's father? Maury Povich.
Right, that's what I said. Murray Povich, right? But again, tell me the guest that was on the show last week or anytime. Yeah. There'll be one guest.
Yeah, that's right. What's interesting about that?
You're saying major media is becoming that?
It is. That's been there for a long time.
Wow. Yeah.
But let me go further. But Joe's making a really interesting point. It's like mention the last guest that was outrageous on Jerry Springer or on Maury Povich. And now do this. Tell me the last outrage that Donald Trump committed before this latest one.
Oh, I know.
It's the same exact thing.
It goes
the
over same and over exact and over thing. Again.
It's the same phenomena, which is we're just into this sort of hysteria all the time.
How did it happen? Did it happen that we're talking about a porn star constantly? And
you brought it up, but CNN is.
But well, so is MSNBC. so is Fox. I watch Fox. Fox is talking about it
because it's become the news. I know Stormy.
Well, here's the thing. I have a real problem with the word star. Like, doing porn, just because you do porn doesn't make you a porn star.
She was
actually. But anybody who does porn now is a porn star.
Right, by definition.
It's a weird thing.
Yeah.
You guys struggle becoming rappers these days and, you know, and making a whole bunch of money. So, again, America loves to see the train wreck.
Oh, by the way, Cardi B is my new favorite human.
Oh, really?
Exactly.
She's my new fan. Exactly. I'm not kidding. She's like, what are you doing with my taxes? I was like, Hardy, go. She's like, what are you doing with my taxes? Because she's making a lot of money. And she's like, where's this going? And I'm like, I want to elect her to office.
My money going, right.
Yeah. So where, you know, Alabama, what do Alabamans think of Doug Jones? What do they think of it?
You know, he won overwhelmingly with the black community.
Yeah.
Right now, a lot of the blacks are still waiting to see what Doug Jones are actually going to do in the Senate. So, you know, right now he's kind of riding the high wave because he actually went in and talked the talk. But now a lot of the black community, especially the Democrats, are saying right now, is he going to walk the walk? Yeah. I think he's going to go up there and play the game, myself personally. I wasn't a big fan of Doug Jones because I think he was just selling the sauce to do what had to be done. He saw it open and he took it. Yeah. But we'll see.
Yeah. Interesting. And so that's the thing that Barkley brought up in that CNN interview, which is the black community has been told vote Democrat for 50 years now. And you're saying, and he's saying, nothing's changed in the black community in 50 years. If anything, it's gotten worse. So why do the Democrats continue to believe they have the African American vote election after election? Do you feel some of the stuff like that? Is that what you guys are talking about? Oh.
Well, me being a Republican, you know, when I look at the Democrats, the reason why I left because I feel, you know, you're no longer serving me. You're selling me.
Right.
And so you took me for granted.
Well, they're using, now, on the they're other also side, using the black community to maintain their power.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And so a lot of even the black politicians, some of them, just when they get the office, they don't do anything anymore because it's automatic. We're going to show up and we're going to vote for you because you look like me. Well, hell, I'm not going to do that, sir.
But is
I'm
going to vote for the But is there job. Anybody in... Do people really in West Virginia believe that coal jobs are coming back? It's not a coal world anymore.
Yes. My wife was just up there for the last 4 years, and people actually believed Donald Trump said he's going to bring the coal jobs back. And I'm like, dude, have you lost your mind?
Well, isn't that sad, though? Isn't that so? You know what I mean? So both sides lie.
It's the train wreck. It's the train wreck. People love the thing of hope. And so, anybody, if you remember the Hunger Games? What did that guy tell his predecessor? Give them hope.
Yeah. So here, well, we had 8 years of hope and not much changed. But let me tell you, let me ask you this. This is something that worries me. When the jobs don't come back and things are, you know, then hope is diminished. The hope that was brought on by the Trump, you know, phenomena. When nothing really changes, like nothing has really changed in the African-American community for 40 years, right? When nothing really changes, what happens to Trumpers? Do they get more angry or do they just go home?
Well,
or do they just go home? That's the really big question coming up.
No, what happens is you can just look at President Obama for the last 8 years. The people who love President Obama, good, bad, ugly, indifferent, guess what? They love him today.
Yeah.
And that's the exact same thing's going to happen with Donald Trump. Good, bad, indifferent. They can be flat broke, but that's my dude. I love him. He did the best he could. The community, the White House, the Senate, the Congress wouldn't work with him.
Yeah, I think Joe's absolutely right. But here's the more interesting question. What if things do start to work out a bit? And what are those people that hate him going to do with all that anger? Who are they going to scapegoat then?
They're going to find somebody else that they can love because they're not going to like Donald Trump.
Well, they're going to want somebody to scapegoat.
Yeah.
They're going to want some scapegoat. Hey, we got to take a little break. Joe, hang on 1 minute. We'll be right back. I want to mention our friends at Bergamot Sport, a supplement that provides all the cardiovascular benefits of the original Bergamot, but with additional additives designed to aid athletes and those with active lifestyles. Bergamot Sport is recommended and used by professional and college athletes throughout the world, helps them improve stamina, reduce recovery time, and muscle inflammation. Bergamot Sport is informed sport certified, so athletes can feel confident that it's all natural and it has been banned substance tested. But even if you're not a pro athlete or just getting a workout once a week or so, Bergamot Sport is still worth a try. It can help you work out harder, recover easier, without worrying about being sore or tired the next day. I've used the products myself. I've recommended them to patients. We use them in our family. And I've done so just as physicians and cardiologists around the world have done. And Bergamot Plus is excellent for what's called non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, which has just passed all other forms of liver disease in terms of causing cirrhosis. So it's something that is a major health issue presently and needs to be paid attention to. For a limited time, our listeners can save 10% on their order by entering code DRDREW at checkout. That is DRDREW, all one word. Try Bergamot Sport for yourself. Visit bergamot.com, that is BERGAMET.com, or just click the Bergamot banner at drdrew.com. All right, we're back, and we're talking to Joe Lockett at the Joe Lockett Show. Joe has his Facebook also. It's facebook.com/joe.lockett.
No, send him to my Joe Lockett Show fan page.
All right,
it's just Joe Lockett.
There you go.
Fan page. And what's ahead for you, Joe? What do you sort of see? What do you want to do?
About?
Well, I mean, do you want to expand your show, syndicate your show? Do you want to? Are you motivated? I'm wondering if you're motivated to make a difference. Is this sort of what preoccupies you? You want to help solve these problems?
Yes, with my radio show, what I do is, you know, in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm the only black conservative talk radio show host here. So my goal is to make sure that we can have the honest conversation. I call it TC Tough Conversation, and move this country forward. I want to put my show on a national level. I want to be syndicated. I also have a TV show that comes on Monday night, too. So we're working on getting things streamed and all that stuff. We went from 6 o'clock in the morning on Saturdays to 4 o'clock in the afternoon and became the number one talk show here on Saturdays.
Great. And who comes in? What kind of dialogue are you having? What's it like?
Well, yesterday actually we had Pastor Mark Burns. He was on the show. We've had Michael Lohan on the show. We usually talk about all the different the social issues that happens and a lot of the political issues that happens. Because on my show, I'm a Republican, but my co-host, guess what? They're Democrats. So we call it the love debate, and so we get to debate the issues. But at the same time, people know that we're very passionate about where we stand. But at the same time, people can see us have the conversation without killing one another and denigrating one another when we on air.
I've
felt that that's really important. I grew up around that, where you had difference of opinions, but it never was personal. And then, you know, I think all of us remember Tip O'Neill and Reagan having a few cocktails every night, joking around about the war they had all day long. Yeah, they respected one another.
They did not.
There's no respect.
Well, there's also this weird projection, which is if some part of me that I don't like is sort of toiling around, I'm going to project it onto you. You're a sexist. You're aggressive. And then they do it in an aggressive way and then accuse you of being what they are. It's a projector. It's kind of a projection slash projector.
Well, but I mean, I remember Reagan calling Tip O'Neill naive.
Yeah, that's a description. He's a bad person, fill in the blank quality. That's just
kind of suggesting he's a stupid person, a lack of insight.
Describing his thinking is naive. not that he's naive because he's a racist or because he's a misogynist. Or
oh, I know that. Yeah. But here's a funny thing. So I don't know if you follow the Dalai Lama, but he gave a speech here about 20 years ago in L.A. and people, you know, it was right at the height of the Tibetan Chinese kind of controversy. And they kept asking him different questions that were framing about politics, right? And he would avoid them and he would dodge them. And then finally, some woman said, Master, what is wrong with the world? And he just, with a twinkle in his eye, like the Dalai Lama has said, lack of insight.
Okay.
Which is a nice way of saying dumb.
No. I disagree.
Lack of insight?
No, lack of insight is a psychological process that people.
You don't think it's it's ignorance?
That's part of it, but lack of education, ignorance, but lack of insight. Like psychotic people don't have insight that they're psychotic.
Well, that's what's going on now. I'm trying to say he said that 20 years ago.
Yeah.
What is going on now is a lack of insight and understanding, like that I could be disappointed in Obama, right? I was disappointed. Not for any of the reasons probably you guys or people didn't like him. I wanted to believe in hope. I was a little suspicious of hope. I was also a little shocked that it could possibly happen, that an African-American could be president in what I believe is a very racist society.
I had an opposite weird reaction. Mine was I was shocked that people were shocked. I was like, that's the world I want to live in.
But that's not the world we live in.
Well,
so it was, though. But watch. But his main thing was, for me, is let's get out of these Middle Eastern wars, right?
Yeah.
And then he didn't. Yeah. Then he doubled down like a hawk.
Well,
right?
It was hard, man. I don't blame presidents for having difficulty delivering on their promises. When they get in there, who knows what it looks like once you
get in
there.
What did you think of Obama's anti-war leading up to and getting elected and then all of a sudden turning into a hawk? What did you think about that?
I think President Obama, like Dr. Drew just alluded to, that no matter what he was saying on the stump speech as President Donald Trump, that when he gets into office, right, it's a whole different ballgame. And now you have to kind of placate to what's on the table and also what you actually said to on your stump speech. So it's tough for anybody in that position. President Obama, my thing was, I just don't think as a leader, he was forthcoming. When he said something, he never came back out and said, okay, hey, this is not going to quite work like we thought it was, but this is what I'm going to do. Yeah. I have a problem with anybody that sells me one thing, but at the end of the day, you don't come back and tell me it's going to be tough. I don't care if it's tough. I'll ride with you all day long, but please tell me that it's going to be a rough ride and you're going to have to kind of back up on what you said. Okay. Presidents have a tough time saying that.
Okay, yeah, so in this last point of this, so Trump is talking about pulling out of Syria immediately, right?
Bob.
If he
don't
does.
Don't listen to him when he talks.
What?
I'm not kidding. It's all negotiated. You don't know what he really wants. You really don't. If you haven't learned that yet, you need to learn it. He's gonna quintuple down on the Chinese. He's gonna go do a $500 billion tariff before we're done here. Not because he wants a $500 billion tariff, because he wants to affect a $100 billion trade imbalance. And so he just does these crazy things that until they look crazy, he does not stop. I've noticed that about him. And once he gets to crazy zone, then he goes, now let's negotiate. And so same thing with out of Syria. That was some sort of telegraphic something. I don't know what that was, but I'm sure it was what he means to do. So relax.
It's so, but the point is, in these overdramatic, whatever, he's a Svengali and he's got a big master plan.
I don't think that either. I just don't think you should listen to some of the rhetoric.
If you watch news feeds, a bunch of children were gassed.
Yeah, terrible.
Right? You can't play games on a world stage. You can't play games with the world economy. And he is. And it's more frightening than anything Obama ever did.
Let me look at the Syria thing now. So now he's gone, look, I wanted to get out. I got to triple down now. I'm going in and taking care of business. It wasn't my fault. These guys gassed a bunch of kids. I'm going in now. And then you go, yeah, he wanted to get out. He said it yesterday. That's how, Bob,
it's like a reality TV show. Oh, I can't take it.
What do you got in there?
It's like watching Maury Povich. Who's the father?
Right. But the thing with Donald Trump is Dr. Drew is saying that with Donald Trump, we got to understand he's a businessman that goes from his gut. Any entrepreneur will understand how he actually works.
That's exactly right.
He wake up in the morning, right? And we have a gut feeling about something. And what he does is he throw a lot of stuff up against the wall and see what's going to work. And then he'll take credit for the stuff that works. And for the stuff that doesn't work, he don't take credit for.
He
never changed from being a businessman.
That's right. That's exactly – you are exactly right. You've got to analyze what he's doing from that perspective or you'll go crazy.
He's not a businessman like Warren Buffett's a businessman.
No,
you guys talk about him.
No.
He brands his name on hotels that he doesn't own. That's not a businessman.
Go watch – Go
He's
watch
a salesman.
The,
He's a salesman.
Well, some developers do a lot of that. That's what their thing is. Developers is a lot of smoke and mirror stuff.
Yeah, he doesn't have any employees. He's never sat at a union table. He's not really a businessman like you guys try to make him out
to
be.
No. You're jumping
out of the circle. But I have to push back on you a little bit, Bob. You're saying he's not a businessman, but he's a multimillionaire or a billionaire.
He's an entrepreneur.
Whatever he's doing has made good business.
He started out with a loan from his father that he would have put it into savings, he'd have more money than he claims to have now.
Bob, go watch Bob.
So you'll just never convince me he's some businessman.
Go watch the Netflix documentary. There's a 5-part doc out there. You may come hardened. You may come with a harder idea, but go watch it. Because you'll see his life. They have a 5-part series there.
I've known Donald Trump. I've met him. I've seen him for 40 years. The guy is a con artist salesman, and now he's president of the United States. That's the end
Bob,
of the story.
Give the average person the same money that President Donald Trump's father gave him and see what they do with it. I'm telling you, we may not like it. We don't like the way it turned out, but at the end of the day, his gut feeling.
No, I like businessmen who employ hundreds of thousands of Americans with good paying jobs. He does not do that. He produces his stuff that he sells in China, right? It's just you guys. I understand that you like him and all that, but
don't accuse us of that. We didn't say that. We're just trying to understand him.
But don't say he's a businessman in the sense of. Like Rex Tillerson is a businessman.
It's different.
Rex Tillerson is a businessman. Trump is a salesman. There's a difference.
Well,
okay.
He was able to employ thousands of construction workers, and interestingly, he put women in the positions they never are in.
Yeah, because they work for less money, Drew.
Wrong.
That's why. Are you kidding me?
Okay. So wait till you see the women that are in those positions. They are no BS.
But they also work for one third less than men that he would have put in that position.
That's not true. And you're talking out of your ass. You don't know that. And so let's look at the facts. And this woman did not complain about the wage. She complained that she felt very pleased with what that job was and what she got paid and what she got done. She didn't like him, but she felt very honored to be in the position of building an entire skyscraper. She was the building director. She got the same as the other guys. But she was a woman.
Same money.
Yeah. You can't. Who's going to stand for that? If you're at that level, you're going to. So anyway, so we're neither here nor there. We're not getting anywhere with all this. This is why he gets us all so. I guess this is where the splintering comes from, man. Maybe he's the scapegoat that has to be maintained. I don't know. Somewhere we have to have a scapegoat in order to focus all this aggression, because everyone just gets upset by the way things are going.
I mean, we're upset because our country is falling apart, and this guy's come along, and one-third of the public believes he's going to fix it. Him alone is going to fix it, and that's insanity.
All right, so we're back. Go ahead, Joe.
I'm going to say this real quick. I hope that President Donald Trump, we wish him the best, right? He's not my guy, but I wish him the best.
That's right.
I hope that he says he want to make America great again. I hope he take this opioid crisis, right, and put the crack and the marijuana into that to make America great again, because you can't make America great again with just opioids. You got to take on the whole issue of the human race or what's going on in our communities.
Yeah, I agree. The addiction, the spiritual emptiness, the father issue, the family issue, I agree, Joe. Joe, really fun to talk to you, man. Congratulations on all your success, and I hope the thing gets the rest of the country gets to see you soon. Feels like something like that's going to happen. So we will look for you at WYDE. 4 to 7 on Saturdays. Bob, any last minute stuff?
I just think that we the people can solve it, not one guy or one movement.
Yes, and we the people must humbly, I think, remember that we're the first nation on earth that so many ethnicities and religions and points of view have come into one system that is based strictly on an idea, which is all men are created equal. And to form a more perfect union, we can form a federation, and we can all get into the basic principles of liberty and freedom, which we seem to have lost. And if we can all just get behind those again, maybe then we'd be good, right, Bob?
Well, I'm waiting.
All right. All right, Joe.
Optimistically, cautiously
all right,
waiting.
All right, I'll talk to you soon.
See you guys later.
All right, Joe. Bye. We're taking a break. Be right back. I think you're all aware that we just had a terrible flu season. It may not be quite over yet. There may be another spike coming. Hopefully you used hydration, Hydralyte, to stay ahead with your hydration. It is the best oral hydration product out there. I intended to invent it. They came along. I got behind them. Even if you avoid the flu, stay hydrated. It sounds simple, but it's not just about drinking water. It's about getting fluids, getting the right kind of fluids, particularly if you're working out regularly, running, that sort of thing. The beauty of Hydralyte is whether you're sick or not, you can absolutely benefit from the proper balance of sodium, glucose, and water. And, of course, Hydralyte does this better than any sports drink. And water alone, that's a different issue. Hydralyte comes in great flavors like orange, berry, and lemonade, available in a pre-mixed drink, a powder, or, what I like, the effervescent tablet that you can simply drop into a glass or a bottle of water. Compared to sports drinks, Hydralyte delivers you up to 4 times the electrolytes with 75% less sugar. That's right. Hydralyte solutions are appropriate for all ages, and each bottle or package includes easy-to-follow dosing instructions. You can find Hydralyte at Rite Aid or at Hydralyte.com/DRDRAW, that's Dr. Drew. For a limited time, any listeners can save 30% on Hydralyte. Just click the banner on my website, drdrew.com. Use the code DrDrew18, that is DRDREW18 at checkout, Hydralyte.com/DrDrew, and use the code DrDrew18.
Same episode with Michael Lohan.
Hey, Michael.
Oh, my gosh. I'm getting PTSD.
I know.
Like all right, so let me do some intros. Of course, we're talking to Michael Lohan. Bob and I worked with him a few years ago now, and he's
been a while.
Active in the industry since. Where should I start, Michael? What do you want to promote?
It's not about promoting anything. I'm just here to talk about where the industry is and, you know, what we're doing
it's
to create awareness.
It's in the toilet.
Listen, Michael has a thing, look, much like you, Bob, Michael has a thing called Recover or Die.
Yeah,
recover
I saw
or
that
die.
Thing.
Com. I think that's a great idea.
I saw
idea.
That.
Yeah.
Very subtle, Michael.
Well, It's a harsh reality, isn't it?
But yeah. I met some people that knew you at this conference in San Francisco a couple months ago, and they're in this sober coaching thing, right? And sober coaching, right? Could you explain to us? Because Drew and I are confused. It just sounds like a sponsor in AA to us. But what is sober coaching? Because I know you know a lot about it.
Well, basically, you're right. It is. It's like a sponsor in AA, but they're with you all the time. I had a client, of course, I can't say his name, but he was a very high-end individual that was actually dating my daughter, and he needed a sober coach, and I got him a sober coach. That person actually lived with him day in and day out for, I'd say, about 5 months.
Here's where I get a
little... But we can't do that for 17 million people.
That's right. There's that. And where it gets me a little dicey is that I've seen sober coaches use with the patient. I've seen that happen. You got to have a really good sober coach.
That's rock and roll sober coaches.
I've seen it a lot, though. I've seen it a lot.
But it's an organization. There's like these nonprofit organizations that are doing it, too. The gal that I met from Texas. And seems to me, and we met people in New Jersey that go to the emergency room when an addict ODs and kind of mentor them or kind of, I don't know, I don't understand. Because it's part of President Trump's initiative. He believes, because Governor Christie believes, in this sober coaching model. And I just don't know how it plays out in a Medicaid way.
I think when they're there in the emergency room and there's people there to give them direction and help them. Because most people, as you well know, they go to an emergency room when they overdose. They get them, they give them Narcan or whatever, and then they release them and they're out on the street using it again.
Yes.
So there is a gentleman in New Jersey.
Michael, right?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Michael, his name is?
His name is Rick Stavola.
Okay.
His foundation is called the Tigger Foundation.
Is that the
his
one?
His son died of an overdose 3 years ago when he was 25 years old. And he started the Tigger Foundation. And what he did is he opened up the Sober House, but he also put people in all the emergency rooms. And I spoke to him last – I've had a couple of meetings with him. But I've spoken to him last week, and he said, Michael, Governor Murphy has come in, and he has subsidized my program. He has actually put people – he's paying for these people to be in there now. But listen, do you really think the answer – that's the answer?
No.
I mean, expanding treatment – treatment centers, which obviously hasn't been working, or TV commercials, or now this thing that the Surgeon General said. I mean, Mr. Adams said that we should give everyone Narcan and overdose kits.
Yeah.
Is that the answer? Is the answer getting people after they overdose getting clean, or is it in educating them and getting them help before this happens?
Well, for sure, you know, prevention is a big deal. But Bob tilted at something before you started speaking, which was, you know, how can you possibly, you can't possibly pay enough professionals to take care of all the sick addicts out there. So why not mutual aid society?
Well, that's why.
Why not 12 step?
Well, I'm trying to get to the root of why this sober coaching thing. Is AA and NA not working? Is NA and AA not doing their job? I believe that's possible.
I would argue that we need more of a warm handoff. So we need people bringing people to 12-step. There's all this literature that shows if you have somebody that comes to the patient and goes, hey, man, I represent this group. I'm here. Let me take you to a meeting. It's a vastly different experience than you giving them a pamphlet and saying, go to AA. Very different. So the warm handoff has an entirely different impact. And then once there, remember, the coach is trying to create motivation. In AA, it's strictly a program of attraction.
Yeah.
So we're relying on the patient to start to do their thing, which we know that can be a bit dicey.
So do you understand what I'm trying to figure out how this sober coaching thing works in the Trump rollout against the opioid epidemic?
Bob, it was not mentioned. Not once. I was there through the whole rollout. Not one mention of that. I was actually bothered by it. It's not in the plan.
Well, and neither is absence-based treatment. So what is in the plan?
What is in the plan? I just said what's in the plan. He wants to increase treatment services. He wants to do TV commercials.
No, but what treatment services? Because that's not what I heard on the call. The treatment services weren't absence-based. They were MAT services they want to enhance.
Unfortunately, that's
medically assisted treatment.
Suboxone.
Medication-assisted treatment.
Yeah. But we know what happened with the methadone program. I mean, I had a conversation with Dr. Drew about NAD. And NAD started in 1961. That would have been the protocol that everyone was using. But methadone came about, and that was a government-subsidized program, and that fell apart. NAD took a back seat to that. I think that's the direction we're going in. I just got back from Congress and speaking with even the VA, and I showed them all the evidence. And they see that this works. It's just that insurance companies don't cover it, and that's a problem. So we're trying to find a way that the government or insurance companies will cover it so we can try new modalities that do work from a medical side. Look, Suboxone is it's narcotic and it's addictive.
Yeah, period.
Naltrexone, which is Vivitrol, is non-narcotic, non-addictive.
And I'm a fan of why don't we have implantable naltrexone? Implantable devices that release naltrexone over years. Fine.
Doc, my wife had one.
Yeah.
My wife had one. I had it cost $120 for a 3-month implant, and it cost $500 for the surgery in the office. It was nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, it makes all the sense in the world, but why is it that a Suboxone implant is approved by the FDA, but a naltrexone implant is not approved by the FDA?
It's totally insane.
It's all red tape.
It's insane. Also, Michael, I want you to look carefully at the relationship between the National Institute on Drug Abuse and the company that makes Suboxone. It's uncomfortably cozy.
I would imagine.
They have been invested in their stuff. They have expanded their patent privileges and done things. And you know there are four other medications that are exactly like Suboxone whose name you've never heard. And they're the same medicine, and they're a lot cheaper. Same medicine.
Yeah.
Four other medicines.
I believe that.
But because it was pushed through NIDA, you don't even know who they are. It's really kind of crazy.
Well, here's what I think.
I think they're doing the same thing with Narcan. And, you know, now they're coming out pushing Narcan. The government is actually promoting Narcan. I can guarantee you there's a relationship between Narcan and, you know, that I don't want to say the name of the pharmaceutical company and the government to some extent.
Narcan's in my pocket.
So here's what's going to happen. You guys want to know?
Yeah, I want to.
Same thing that happened before is going to happen again.
Yeah.
Elite people, wealthy people, will go to abstinence-based treatment. It will be all cash. Yep. And the working class will be given Suboxone, which is much like the methadone program that rolled out very heavily in the 1970s. So once again, the working class and low middle class will not have access to thriving like doctors will. Like doctors insist that doctors do.
Because
doctors can't have Suboxone.
Correct. There's literally the literature says there's not enough evidence to suggest that it's appropriate to prescribe to medical professionals. There's no good evidence.
Did you hear that, Michael Reed?
No kidding.
Say it again. Say it again.
I've got it on a slide I produced for a talk I'm giving. And it was so striking to me.
I told you, I feel like I'm in session with you guys.
And it's the same thing as saying, we have not enough evidence that we give this narcotic to an airline pilot. It's like, of course you can't. Of course you can't. Oh,
so,
my God.
So doesn't that make you sad, kind of?
Yes,
that's
all
the
this
way
does make me sad. This whole hour is making me sad. This whole thing is making me sad.
And that,
I'm looking at you guys and I'm thinking and I'm saying to myself, here I am out there in the public. And I'm crying from the hilltop saying that 30 days of treatment doesn't work.
So are we. We are doing it too. We're saying the same thing.
But no, I'm sitting here now and I'm thinking about – I was on a TV show. It was all real, but I was on a TV show. And what I learned in those 30 days on the TV show helped me immensely to stay clean when I left.
Well,
so if I could do it – I mean, why can't anyone else? I really think it all boils down to your will to do that.
Your will, and it's also humbly, and I really mean this humbly, the connection you make with other people. And Bob and I kind of know how to do that, to make that connection so you have the motivation and you start trusting other people again and you start believing in yourself. And we sort of know how to do that. And we unfortunately, because we're not training medical professionals in abstinence-based treatment, there aren't a lot of people who know how to do that anymore. Would you agree, Bob? But there's some.
Yeah.
There's some, but you have to find them.
Well, I mean, Michael's very aware. Once the huge profits came in the late 2000s, The quality of care went down. That's the thing that you always mention. The more you pay, or in this instance, the more money they make, the lower the quality of care. I don't know how that happened.
It's like education.
Right? It's ridiculous.
Particularly in Florida, it did.
Right? Yeah, my treatment center down here, when I had my treatment center, I mean, we tried to maintain a quality of a good quality of care and even give more services. But for the most part, I don't own that treatment center anymore, but for the most part, you're 100% right. As they made more money, they didn't put it back into the business to expand
right.
services.
That's right.
What they did was put it in their pockets.
That's right.
And it's
you
a shame.
It has really to be is. A calling. It can't be a business. And then, Michael, you've gotten big on trauma therapies, I know, which Bob and I are big on. One thing we always point out, though, is when to do the trauma therapies. We want people to get first work on their addiction and their sobriety, then do the trauma therapies. That's sort of our...
That's a very good point. Yeah. A really good point. I mean, that's always a question that's raised, though, too, because as you probably know, EMDR is pretty deep trauma therapy.
Right, love EMDR.
And it can really bring out, really identify the original triggers or some of the triggers.
Did you do it? Did you do EMDR yourself?
Yeah, I did. Yes.
Do you mind me asking what kind of stuff you were working on? Because I remember the traumas you would tell us and you'd be disconnected from them. We were like, holy crap, Mike, those were terrible.
A lot of things came out had to do with my dad. A lot.
Well, you guys were trying to kill each other.
Yeah.
I'd go like, Mike, that's so traumatic. You're like, no, that's just Long Island.
That's just Long Island. <It's> like,
I saw it as normal. You know?
That is Long Island.
I know. Yeah. It may be routine Long Island. It is definitely not normal.
No. And you know, I realize that now, and I see a lot of that in people I deal with. But you know, I just like I said. Things that we're talking about, being in the treatment industry, I was able to cater to 20, 30, 40 people at a time.
Yeah.
But doing what we're doing now with a movement like Recover or Die, we can reach the masses now. And what better way? Let's face it. Most of this all starts with our adolescence and our youth. It's getting younger and younger.
Yeah.
Why shouldn't we try to nip it in the bud at that age instead of waiting for someone to be in their late 20s, 30s, or 40s when they already have a job, they have a family, they have children, yeah. they have so much responsibility, and there's so much collateral damage.
Well, age 8 and age 14 are critical windows, particularly in the males age 14, 15. So if you can get at them then, you know, then you can start to change the trajectory of their launch. You know, that's the idea.
And, right, and I think what you're doing, Bob, well, I know how much you love music. I think we all know how much you love music. But I think that's a great segue to get people into treatment by, you know, bring them in. Especially kids love rap and hip-hop and all that stuff, and that's why we started what we're doing. And I'm sure – I don't know what kind of success you've had with yours, but I know you run a treatment center now. It's probably a darn good one based on what my experience with you. But and I know Aaron, and he's a great guy. But you know, I just want to appeal. I want people to understand that there's other things out there. Like Dr. Drew just said, there's other medications besides Suboxone that are cheaper and they do the same thing. There is NAD. Vivitrol is great, but you have to know when to use it and how to use it.
Yeah.
Neurotherapy is another big program that people really should be looking at and pursuing because it rewires your brain. There's so much damage done to the brain.
You're talking about neurobiofeedback?
Yes, yeah. And TMS especially.
Yeah.
Transcranial magnetic stimulation we've had great, great results with that.
Because I've worked with that. You got to it can't be with people that are 2 weeks sober. It has to be in the second, third month.
Yeah.
They're putting these things on their heads only insurance only wants to monitor inpatient setting, right? So they're putting it on. They're putting them on the 2 weeks sober. The people aren't even detoxed yet.
No.
And insurance doesn't want to really pay that, reimburse that much for it. But the reason I think it's so important is if you do at the beginning of a session, you do a brain map, a brain paint, and you can actually show their progress and how they're healing.
Yes.
So right now, what do we have, Bob? We have alumni divisions in treatment centers, and they call up people 5 months out and say, hey, are you still clean? And meanwhile, they're snorting a line and drinking the smoking joint, and they're like, yeah, I'm still doing great.
Right,
you don't know. You can't monitor them.
But
when you have this physical and you have this chart in front of you where you can show that the brain is healing, you know they are getting better.
Yeah.
Mike, I'm inspired by you, man. I'm so glad you're doing well. And
well, you guys, listen, you guys were a big, big part of it. And you just said a support system is so important. Most people that go to treatment, if they try to call their therapist or call the owner or call someone and say, I need to talk to someone, they're unavailable.
Yeah.
Bob, Dr. Drew, I mean, whenever I tried to call you, you pick up the phone, you text me, you respond. I want to say to everyone out there in the industry, it's so important for you to show the people that were your clients the support they need and show you're available and you care to them, because they lose hope when people don't pick up the phone and show that they care.
It's an interpersonal disease that has an interpersonal solution. I really believe that. Well, Mike, thank you so much, buddy. Is there a website you want to send people to or anything?
Just recover or die.
recoverdie.com. We'll look
it's
for
really
it.
That simple. There are two roads, and one leads to death, and one leads to recovery.
Yeah, recover or
I
die.
Love that, I like Michael.
I'm going to come to Temecula, and I'm going to set up right in front of your place, and I'm going to blast
one way or the other. That's
all right,
funny.
All right, buddy. Take care of yourself. Great to see you. Stay in touch.
God bless. I love you guys.
Right, take care, Michael.
All right, buddy. And cheers. And a reminder, if you like the show, tell a friend. We appreciate you all. We appreciate your feedback. Go to doctordrew.com/survey. Answer a few questions that can help us continue to make the show better and better. Maybe just 5 minutes of your time. Again, doctordrew.com/survey. Please also go and click through at the same website, doctordrew.com, the Hydrolite banner. You get 30% off your purchase with the code DRDREW18, Dr. Drew 18. It used to be Drew 18. Now it's Dr. Drew 18. We love this product, and Hydrolite obviously is something that I wanted to have invented, and they got there first, so good on them. We have also special prices on Bergamot, the Bergamot banner at doctordrew.com. We will give you a discount with that as well. And stay healthy in 2018. Remember, a non-alcoholic fatty liver disease becoming the number one source of cirrhosis. And Bergamot has some excellent results on non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. Also, check out KBC 790. We're there Monday through Friday, noon to 3 Pacific time with Lauren Savon. You can tune in every day. You can also see the podcast on doctordrew.com at kbc.com. You can listen there if you're not in Los Angeles or San Francisco area. We're on KGO up there, too. And finally, a new health and fitness podcast called Swole Patrol with Mike Catherwood. Please do subscribe and tell a friend about that one. That one I think you'll like if you haven't seen it. You can rate us 5 stars. It's hashtag you live. All right. Find us on Twitter at Dr. Drew, at First Lady of Love, at Rehab
sleep?
Bob Forrest.
Do you ever sleep?
I like my work. at This Life Podcast, join the email list at doctordrew.com. Hopefully, the Opium series. You need to read the Opium series. We were
putting
online.
Yeah, you sent it to me.
No, it's on that got 14 parts. We haven't even go. It's many, many, many
you
chapters.
You sent me the outline.
I think I showed you a timeline of how
the
shit went.
The 4 pages.
Oh, no.
And
we
looked some of it up.
We already have like probably 60 pages there of material.
Well, you have 9 episodes, I think.
9 episodes probably eats about 3 pages, about 30 pages of stuff. And we take it all the way back to prehistory and bring it forward. We're just now getting into the sort of 80s, 90s and how things unraveled. But we brought it all the way from the Civil War.
It's all on the website.
It's on the website at doctordrew.com.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Just raising kids, living life, working 2 days a week.
This life.
That's all. Seriously, I could be a millionaire and I'd never see my kids, or I could be a thousandaire and be with my kids all the time. That's what I do.
That's right. That's I think a common
thousandaire is good, isn't it?
Yeah. Yes, of course.
I'll take it.
Yeah. We'll see you next time.
Remember, you can find all these podcasts at drdrew.com. The Dr. Drew podcast, the This Life podcast, and the Adam and Drew podcast, which is available 5 days a week. Find them all on iTunes and rate us 5 stars. Subscribe and get it first. And if you're really happy, click on the Amazon banner at drdrew.com to help support the show. We'll thank you for it. If you join the email list via drdrew.com/contact, we'll send you a weekly infusion newsletter with Dr. Drew's news. We're so grateful when you get in touch. We read all your emails and we'll bring you the subject matter you want to hear about.
You live.